Welcome to the latest episode of the Finding Hope podcast from Rogue Retreat. You can find us in numerous ways. First of all, you can go to facebook.com/Rogue Retreat, and we're hosted by anchor.fm, but you can also find us through TuneIn and Apple Podcasts. Without any further ado, on with the latest episode. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Finding Hope with the ever-famous Chad McComas as our victim for the week. And we're very happy that he's here, because I've wanted to do this one for a long time. And Marcy, thank you for talking to your dad and convincing him that he should do this, although I doubt if he needed any convincing. But anyway, Matt, do you want to start things off?
I do. I will just say that he's been a little bit elusive on these for a little while. And Chad, we're very grateful to get you on the call here. So I guess I'll just start off with, so you've been around for Rogue Retreat for a little while now. Can you tell us a little bit about how the vision for Rogue Retreat got started?
Yeah, I can do that. And it's great to have this opportunity. And thanks, Stan. I appreciate you being part of what we do here at Rogue Retreat and bringing us this idea of having podcasts. I think it's been great. And Matt, you leading out, and I can see we got Marcy on the call and also Crystal. Rogue Retreat started back in 1998 with a group of just committed guys and ladies sitting around a table saying, we want to do something for those people who kind of fall through the cracks of society. We especially at that point, we're thinking about people get caught up in addictions and, you know, what kind of opportunities were there in the community to help these people get the help they needed. We didn't sense that there was enough opportunities. There are definitely some great programs for people that had drugs or alcohol problems, but what about other addictions? What about overeating? What about relationship issues? What about shopaholics? You know, we have all these religious addicts, all these kind of people that need that same kind of training and help that most of the programs out there don't do. And so we said, could we start something? And we envisioned actually having a live-in recovery center, much like what the ARC does or On Track or different programs. But the good Lord changed us pretty quickly.
And so how did the Lord change you in that sense? Because I know that when you started out, you were saying that a lot of the focus was on addiction issues and those kind of things. And how did the scope kind of evolve over that time?
Well, it wasn't very long till we got kind of pulled into housing. We had never thought about doing anything with housing. We had thought of, the typical 30, 60, 90 days in a facility that's a live-in facility. You have counselors there. You have a safe, protected spot to be in. You can zone out the rest of the world and just focus on your own issues and then come out feeling so much better about life and get a new fresh start. But then we got pulled into doing a men's recovery house, and we had never anticipated doing that. About a year later, that got plopped in our laps, and we thought, hey, well, this is kind of fun. And we began to learn how to run recovery houses, or maybe I should say learn how not to run recovery houses.
I think that's my favorite saying that you have, is you quickly learn how not to do it.
We actually ran a number of recovery houses from 99 to 2006, and at one time we had three men's and a woman's, and it was a disaster. We did everything wrong we could possibly do and not even know what we were doing wrong. But you know, the good Lord has a way of training us. And sometimes we have to go through the back door to figure out where the front door is. And I don't regret those years. I don't regret all those lessons we learned going through. I didn't really enjoy it that much. You know, it was terrible in 2006 to have this nonprofit that had no money, no paid staff, a very sketchy board in those days, you know, and to know we were $40,000 in debt, you know, and now how in the world are we going to pay that off? I can remember searching, and this is before the recession, you could actually go online and find no interest credit cards, you know, no payments, I mean, no fees per year and no interest. Mm-hmm. They were available back then, you know, and so I don't know why in the world anybody would do that, but that's probably why we had the financial crisis. But, you know, I was searching those because we had $40,000 in debt. And I was buying, I'm trying to get these credit cards and put them all on there so I didn't pay any interest and we could pay this thing off. And, that was a really interesting learning experience. But what it did was it led us to having to relook at who we are. And we'd fallen in love with housing people then, but we just didn't know how to do it. And then about 2006, I actually heard a message one day, and I believe the Lord was speaking. He says, "You stop calling it an addiction recovery program and call it a homeless program." And I thought, well, that makes sense, because nobody really wants to help an addict, but people kind of want to help a homeless person. It could be the same person, but just that different label changes everything. And once we changed it in 2006, I still remember it was July of 2006. From then on, we started getting donations and started getting help for this program, for before we couldn't get anybody to want to help us.
And it helps people think beyond the label. I remember being a part of I've always been an advocate for the disability community. And one year they had a thing called Options for Success. And the theme was thinking beyond the label. And think of how labels follow us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, labels are one of my least favorite things as a result of just stigma that kind of comes with them sometimes. So, Chad, that was 2006 when the mission of Rover Tree kind of shifted over to the homeless. And that kind of opened up a lot of doors. But I think the biggest one that a lot of folks might not know about is the state grants that kind of landed Rover Tree in the current place that we're at. Can you talk a little bit about how you were led to those?
Absolutely. And I'll have to say this. What we've learned along the way is just keep doing the next right thing, even if you can't figure out where you're going. You know, and because if we really believe the Lord has led this organization, we're not a faith-based organization, but we're based on faith. And we know that we've had favor and we've had direction along the way. We just have to be, you know, smart enough to follow the direction and not get off course. But, you know, as we're struggling, well, what are we supposed to be doing? Well, then this opportunity would come, and then this opportunity would come. And I can remember, I think it was Betty Wolf, who was one of our volunteers and just an amazing woman. And we just have a lot of heart for Betty. I don't know if we've done a podcast on her, but we've got to.
She is on our list.
Yeah, Rogue Retreat wouldn't be here without Betty. But she came to me and said, "Hey, there's a state grant. I think we got to go after it." And, you know, here we were still an organization, deep in debt, no paid staff. You know, just we had nothing really going for us except a heart, you know. And I said, "Man, I don't think we want to go after a state grant. We're nobody." And she said, "Well, I think we really ought to go." And then so she brought down the state representative. We sat around a table. We explained what our dream was. And this lady said from the state, "Well, I think you guys ought to apply. I think maybe you'll qualify." And so Betty helped us write a grant. And that was back in 2008. And then in 2009, I think it was late 2008, 2009, we went up to Salem and went before the Oregon State Housing and Community Services Organization and told them who we were, and of all things, they actually gave us a grant. I mean, it just blew us away. They should never have given us that grant. We had no right to have that grant, but it paid for the property we had on Riverside, which our board had gotten us into with no money down and interest-only payments, which was ridiculous, but that's what we're in. And just a few months before we were going to end up losing everything, we get this grant, which paid off the whole property. $660,000 paid it, gave us $500,000 to remodel, and then gave us subsidies for rent and case management for 2 years. I mean, it just like we went from nothing to having property well over $1 million worth. And it's just crazy.
And money for supportive services, which was a big thing at that point, too.
Yeah, we could hire our very first employee. We hired our first employee April 1st of 2009, and that's led to where we are today. I don't even know how many employees we have today. I think we have 70.
Yeah, we have over 70. That was actually one of my next questions, is you were talking about 2006 and 2008 when it was really this group of all volunteers that had been there from the beginning, and now we're an organization that has over 70 paid staff. What does that feel like, going from a kind of that small organization where we could all sit around the table and help each other out to having these scattered sites and all these different employees that are here to do the mission?
You know, it is absolutely overwhelming and humbling. There's just no way that I should be leading an organization like this. I'm not professionally trained to do this. You know, I'm a full-time licensed and ordained pastor, I did take this as in college, but I'm not set up for this thing. And every day I'm having to readjust who I am and learn how to do it better. It's a good thing I have great employees like you, Matt, and Crystal, and Marcy, and Stan around me that makes this organization what it is today. But we have to stay humble. If we ever start thinking that we got ourselves here, we're in trouble. Yeah. I remember Heather, our very first employee, along the way she kept saying, I am not qualified to be me. You know, the position that she had, if we were putting a job reference out, not a reference, but, you know, a job opening out there and saying, hey, we got this job, here's the qualifications, Heather wouldn't even have qualified for her own job. And so that's kind of who we are and who we've grown into be now, which is amazing to me.
You know, what's that saying? God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called, or something like that.
It definitely fits with us.
Yeah. You know, I'll say one thing as a personal point of privilege. I am really proud that I'm able to be here. When I first came here, I wasn't sure if things were going to work out, and I was afraid to hope that things would work out to the extent that they have. Because it's always been in my experience where things haven't always been the best of all. But I'll tell you, I love being able to be here. And all the people that I've met since I've come here, it's been such a rewarding experience for me. And thank you, Chad, for allowing me to be here. It means more than words can say.
You know, Stan, I think you had a key word in there, hope. You said you didn't dare hope, you know. And Rogue Retreat years ago decided our mission statement had to do with hope. And we said that our job is to give opportunities for the homeless to have hope. But I think it's also opportunities for our staff to have hope. We had a staff meeting today, and it was so heartwarming to hear everybody talk about what this organization means to them. The friendships they're creating here, the lessons they're learning here, the growth that they're going through here. This organization isn't just for the homeless people we serve. It's for the
but really, it's a family.
Yeah,
it's a family, and I'm proud to be a part of that family.
Well, absolutely.
You know, I myself am also honored to be a part of it too, and. Chad, one of the things that you were kind of talking about was the growth of the organization. And you were also talking about kind of the changes that you've had to make in yourself over the years as you've continued to walk down this path. Can you describe a little bit about how your heart has changed from doing this work?
Absolutely. Back in 1997, I had to leave a denomination I've been involved with for 20 years. And the Lord just kind of pulled me out of that and led me to start Set Free Christian Fellowship, but then also Rogue Retreat. And I can remember thinking, oh, I'm going to deal with homeless people in West Medford. I'm freaked out to go to West Medford. They're going to, you know, take me down a dark alley and take all my money and leave me for dead, you know. That was the kind of mindset that I had, and that I had to be totally changed inside. He had to work on my heart and realize that the people in West Medford, some of the neatest people in this community, you know, and to get to know these folks, even though they've had some bad breaks along the way, maybe some bad choices along the way, some incredible people, and just give them a chance to shine, and they will. They'll do incredible things. So I had to change a lot of my own personal heart along the way. I wouldn't have been caught dead on the west side of Medford in 1996. But now today, I feel more comfortable on the west side of Medford. And I know that sounds crazy, but I love to go to our campground. I can't tell you what it feels like to walk inside that little compound that we have over there by Crater Lake Ford and see those people safe. They're living in a tent, but they're safe. They're able to sit and just talk and eat together and not be afraid that somebody's going to beat them up in the middle of the night or steal all their stuff. That's humbling.
We'll be back with more of the Finding Hope podcast after this message from Rogue Tech Pros. Is your computer giving you a headache? Are you wanting to replace that monstrosity with a new box? Well, there is only one place to go, and that's Rogue Tech Pros. I know because I use the services that Charlie of Rogue Tech Pros provides. He services well what he sells. And for further information, give Charlie a call at 541-299-2100. That again is 541-299-2100. You will be glad that you did.
So, Chad, I know that you have a unique philosophy about investing in the folks that we serve. I know that a lot of folks out there, they've heard in this podcast that we have over 70 staff now, but they're probably not aware that almost 50% of them have been through our programs or have some sort of lived experience. Can you talk a little bit about why you have you kind of raised people up through the ranks to help do this mission and this work?
Yeah, I think I can answer that hopefully short. I've taken a lot of management and leadership classes along the way. I actually studied for my it's a equivalent of a PhD in ministerial, you know, rounds, circles. And I took a lot of leadership stuff. And I remember reading that when you have an organization, you bring people from outside that organization into the organization, they can maybe fit or they may just destroy the culture in that organization because they don't have the same culture. They're coming from somewhere else. It can happen in churches. I think a lot of times when a church hires a pastor from outside the community, they bring him in. That may not be a good fit. They come from a different place. And so I've always thought as an organization that we really need to raise up our own leadership as much as we possibly can. Central City Concern out of Portland has always been a model for me. I'm just impressed with what they've done in the last 30 to 40 years up there. And when we took a tour years ago, and I don't think, Matt, you're with us then, but we discovered that when we were meeting their staff, many of them had been clients there, started out even in their detox or started out when they're housing programs, and now they were leaders and they'd been there 20 years. And they were committed to that organization. And I took note to myself saying, that's the kind of spirit I want in our organization, people that are committed to this organization. So when you take a person, and I'm looking at Crystal, when you take a person like Crystal, who was a participant in this program, Marcy was too, and this organization gained what they needed at the time. Mm-hmm. And they have grown who they are on their own, but they have a deep commitment to what this organization does. So they're safe leaders now. They're safe employees now. They're not about to mess up this culture. They're just going to build it. And that's what I want to see this organization do, is keep bringing people up through the ranks and building it.
Do you realize the first two people I met when I came to Rogue Retreat, of course, you know, I met Matt first long, you know, when we were going through the process of creating what I'm doing now. But the first two people were Crystal and Harold.
Yeah.
And it was such a neat, I knew I found a home when I met them.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a great example because Harold, even though he wasn't in our program, he did come up through a program here in the Rogue Valley. And I got to know Harold before he was who he is today, when he was just trying to figure out who he was. And I got to be part of that whole process and watch him grow, and he's just grown into a tremendous human being, just tremendous influence that man has. I'm just honored he's part of this organization. And that's what we want to build here.
Yeah. And Chad, I want to change direction just for a quick second here, because I know that we're going to be running out of time. But Rogue Retreat for many years was kind of under the radar and unknown for almost the first full two decades that it was in existence. Then about 4 years ago, that began changing. Can you talk a little bit about how that change occurred and what that's turned into?
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster, Matt. That's for sure. When we first started Rogue Retreat, we had 5 beds in a men's house. There's no reason you want to promote that too much because you have 5,000 people who need it and you only have 5 beds. So you're going to be saying no, no, no all the time. So we just kind of kept quiet. When we got our first apartments, we had 11 at Riverside and we had 8 at Great. We had 19 apartments. Okay. So we had 19 apartments. That's only 19. So we didn't, we had a long list of applications already. We didn't need anybody to know who we were because we just say no all the time. now that we have 300 every night under our roofs, and we're looking at maybe adding another 100 soon in different places, we don't mind being out in the public because we can serve more people. We don't have to say no as often, which is really great. And what really turned it, Matt, I think you're trying to get at, is Hope Village. That's what turned everything for us. We couldn't hide anymore.
Yeah. I know, just looking back through the financials and everything, even from community-based donations, that's when the community's interest really kind of took hold with us. And now it's led to all these different partnerships that are almost multiplying quicker than we can keep track of.
Almost every day.
And it's extremely humbling because, like you were saying, we're not a faith-based organization, but we're an organization that is led by faith. And it almost feels very serendipitous the way that the stars keep aligning to open these doors for us.
It's absolutely amazing. And I think, Matt, one of the dreams I have as an organization is that we can help other communities. And we're beginning to see that more and more. We've got more people coming to us saying, your programs are working. What can we copy? Can we do the same thing? And we just love to help other people.
And Chad, while we're on that topic, how can we help other communities?
Yeah, we can't duplicate ourselves and be everywhere. But, you know, we can come alongside. I think we have a discussion coming up with Roseburg, some leaders up there pretty soon. And, you know, how can we counsel them? Can we help steer them? We've got our Hope University with courses, and that was put together just about a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, just over a year ago.
And I don't know how many different cities we've now touched through that. It just blows me away.
I know our last telecourse, we had, I think, over 20 cities on it. And that was pretty phenomenal to have that much interest regionally in how to set up urban campgrounds.
Yeah.
Stan and I were just doing a podcast earlier, Stan and I and Marcy, with Officer Jewell from the Livability team. And, you know, we're partnering with them on a number of things, but our entire region is being looked at as a model for how to break down the silos and do this work in their own local communities. And it's very humbling to get to be a part of that.
And Matt, we get to be part of it. That's an incredible thing.
And the thing is, next this Wednesday, I'm going to do my little bit. Matt and I are going to be interviewing a group of people, a person from
Hip Housing,
which is called the Human Investment Project.
Cool.
And we will be talking with them, and I've been promoting it with my other job and telling them, you know, reminding people that they're going to be guests and telling them how to receive the podcasts and doing what I can to promote what we do, because I believe in it. You guys believed in me, so I have to return the favor.
Absolutely. Now, those that don't know, Stan gets syndicated for a broadcast that he does each week down in the Bay Area. So he's using his platform there to help get the word out, which is amazing.
And I think, Matt, I want to say this because I know we're running out of time, and we'll have to talk about this some other time, but our attitude is that we all need to work together in this community. We're not here to compete with any other nonprofit. We're not trying to go after the dollars they're going after. If they can grow, we grow. That's our attitude. And so we're seeing more and more of that spirit in this valley, which I just love, you know, that the foundations are working with the nonprofits, and the nonprofits are working with the city, and the city's trying to work with the county. And it just seems like something good is happening here.
Mm-hmm. It does. You know, it feels like that overall, I mean, the entire heart of the community is beginning to change to try to find ways that we can connect with each other, which is absolutely amazing to get to be a part of that. Chad, I know that we're running out of time, but what is your vision for the future of Rogue Retreat? I know that we're organizations that led by faith, so oftentimes our own ideas are not necessarily what comes true. But what do you see Rogue Retreat growing into? And how can people play a role in helping us get there?
And maybe that's another podcast, because we could spend a lot of time talking about that.
Right.
I think what it boils down to, just every day, can we add another bed somewhere? You know, that's always on my heart. Can we add another bed? Can we add another tiny house? Can we add another campground? And that is my heart, because every time we add a bed, that's another person that we get to help. And maybe another person who won't die on the streets. And maybe another person who can get a job and start putting their life back together and be successful. That's what I do. I remember the story about the little boy who was throwing the starfish into the ocean. There's a whole bunch that got washed up and they're all drying out, and this man sees this guy throw one in, and he goes up to the boy and says, there's so many, you're not going to make any difference. He says, but for this one, he threw it in, I made a difference.
Yeah.
And we can't solve all the homeless problems, but we can solve the next one.
You know, I heard a saying that someone said, and I loved it, by the inch, life's a cinch. By the yard, life is hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. It kind of takes me to the saying, how do you eat a whale? You do it one bite at a time. And so that little boy throwing those starfish in, for the mass majority of them, it didn't mean much. But for that one starfish, it changes that person's life. And then with the butterfly effect, you never know what kind of changes they're going to make in people's lives.
Yeah.
And so, Chad.
So let's get back together again. We'll talk more specifically, but we just need to add more beds.
I agree. Well, I think coming up then, we need to do a vision podcast for the future. That way we can maybe get our leadership team to have a conversation that we can capture and inspire the community.
Oh, I like that.
Yep. All right. Well, Chad, thank you for your service and your years of dedication to this mission. It's beginning to pay off and beginning to make changes in communities beyond our own. And so I just want to thank you for being here and allowing all of us to be of service with the mission of Rogatree.
Hey, it's an honor. And I'm excited about tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that.
All right. Go. I love it. All right, Stan, you want to take us home?
Yes, indeed. Matt and Chad, I really want to thank you folks for believing me and allowing me to be here unsubsidized. That means more than words can say, and I truly mean it. And with that, this concludes episode number 54 of the Finding Hope podcast. Stay well and be good to each other.
Hey, this is Chris Janish, co-producer of the Finding Hope podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode. New episodes out every Wednesday. We'd love if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to connect with us, find Rogatree on Facebook at facebook.com/Rogatree.